The show is live and local. I'm Kevin Kelly, the host. We run every weekday from 12 to 1, and we bring you local performances of by local and visiting artists, mostly musical, but often theatrical. In the case of today, it is theatrical. Specifically, a performance coming up shortly by the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana of Alan Ayckbourn's play Absurd Person Singular. We'll have some scenes played out and hear a bit about both the playwright and the show, and you'll get all the details on when it runs and how to get tickets and all of that. We'll also have a calendar somewhere midway through the show as well of other things that you can go out and see and hear in your listening area. It's live and local on FM 90.9. That was music by American composer Paul Bowles called Music for a Farce, which originally was to have been a play called Too Much Johnson by William Gillette. It was to have been put on by the Mercury Theater, a production led by Orson Welles. The play actually never happened, and so Bowles ended up arranging the music that he'd written for it as a suite, and we heard it played, some of it heard it played by members of Chicago Pro Musica here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly. And I have a number of guests on the show today, all of them actors in the Station Theater's production, Station Theater in Urbana, of Alan Ayckbourn's play Absurd Person Singular from 1972. And the director of the show, Joy Hoffsummer, is with us. And also, as I said, a number of the actors who are in semi-alphabetical order here: Katie Baldwin, Matthew Green, Cara Morizzi, Lincoln Macula, and Debbie Richardson. We thank you all for coming in, because you're going to do a little of this play for us as well.
That's right.
I am sorry to say, and I guess embarrassed to say, that out of the 70-plus plays that Alan Ayckbourn seems to have written, I have seen none of them.
Oh, really? Yeah.
Isn't that awful?
He's quite prolific. And actually, this year, The Norman Conquest, which is one of his plays, received, and I was trying to remember the category. They got a Tony this year. It's an older play. Most of his plays were written in the 70s and in that era. A lot of them were, although he's continuing, of course, to write now. But that's one that it might have been revival. I'm not sure. A revival, I'm getting a nod. But it did get a Tony this year.
Well, I just ran into somebody at the gym this morning who had heard the promo for this show, that we were going to be talking about this, and he saw that.
Oh, really?
And yes. He said it was just side-splittingly hilarious. Side-splittingly, I guess.
Is yeah, yeah.
Hilarious.
That's so, what we're working for.
Yeah, yeah, so he's looking forward to seeing this play. And so I guess I've got good reason to make sure that I go see it as well. Why don't you tell us what you know about Alan Ayckbourn?
Well, again, very prolific British playwright, sort of the Neil Simon, I would say, in that category of in Britain, and writes comedies that have a dark edge, but very funny. Still, it's that satire, little bit of satire mixed in that I think really makes them smart as well as very, very funny.
So does he write exclusively comedies?
You know, I don't
or
know.
Just
I don't know entirely. That was, I made that assumption, but I shouldn't have.
So those are the ones that get done. Apparently.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah, those are the popular ones.
Yeah. Is this your first involvement with one of his shows?
Yes, it is. It is. I've seen his plays before, but I have never actually done one before.
And how did you either have been in it or directed it? Neither.
Neither, yeah.
Neither.
Either, yeah.
I don't even know which one I say under normal circumstances, but that's what came out. So how did you end up becoming the director of the Celebration Company's production of this play?
Well, they had put out a call for submissions for the summer, and they were saying they wanted to do a musical and a comedy, or a musical and a straight play, and the musical that was set was The Full Monty, which just closed this weekend and was a big hit and was fabulous production. And so I thought, well, you know, I why don't I pitch something? And originally I pitched Blithe Spirit. I wanted to do an Noel Coward. And because it was running on Broadway, that the rights to that were pulled. And so I thought, well, what else have I always wanted to do? And this play is one that I've always wanted to do. And I saw it back in, boy, this is going to date me, let's see, when it was fairly new, let's put it that way, probably late 70s probably is when I saw it. And it's the only time I've seen it, but I remembered it. And at that point I said, someday I want to do this play. And
so that's quite a long-term memory.
Yeah, yeah. Well, it stuck with me.
Yeah, well, what made it stick?
It was so funny. It really was. And it was so clever, I thought. Just sort of witty and clever. And the language, I thought, was clever and bright. And just, and there's so, something we won't get to show you is how physical it is. It's got a lot of physical comedy.
Yeah, that's hard to do on radio.
Yeah. So you'll have to come see it to see
that.
Yeah,
y'all are going to be doing a radio play today, so that's going to be sort of a different, I imagine will be a challenge in some ways to convey with just the voice what you might also convey with the body. Because, you know, those old-time radio plays, you could
that's
imagine
right.
people doing the things they were saying they were doing.
Right.
So this
and they
be
had the Foley artist
today.
There to kind of help fill in some, but
the what?
Foley artist. With,
what is that?
The
sound
effect.
Sound effects.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, I didn't bring my slide whistle.
Hmm. Yeah, that would help.
Is there a slide whistle in your part?
No.
No.
It would add something.
Yeah. Sound. Well, you know, I guess I could have thought of that if I. Maybe next
indicator.
Time we do a straight play, I'll have to ask what sound effects are required, and we'll see what we can come up with.
Right,
we'll have our
right.
we'll have our weather guys come in here, and I'm sure they can come up with
something.
Radio
with pictures, you know?
Yeah.
That would be so cool.
Well, every once in a while, I do try to describe things, but I don't know if I can describe what you're all going to end up doing. So who wants to give us a bit of an overview of what this play is about?
Somebody else take it over here.
Surely you all know.
Oh, it's about 2 hours, I would say. Well spent.
That means you just got the nod, Lincoln Macula.
Well, I don't know if it's any about any. Well, one thing about the title, it's just, Joy, did you mention about the title?
No, I didn't. No.
There was another play that he was thinking about writing with the title Absurd Person Singular, but he never wrote that one. But he wrote this one, and he just gave it that title because he liked it. So there's no meaning behind the title Absurd Person Singular to attach to the rest of the play. So there's no, don't use the title as a guide. It doesn't mean anything. It's just
hence
a
the
nice
absurdity.
snappy title. And
but there are people in it.
There are people.
Mm-hmm. And it is absurd.
It is absurd.
So
there
are
go.
Six people. There are three couples. It mm-hmm. it takes place over three consecutive Christmas Eves. The first act is in last Christmas. The second act is this Christmas. And the third act is next Christmas. And each act takes place in a different kitchen. And the idea of that Ackmoren had for this play was that he was playing with the idea of action that's taking place away from the main action. So we're having parties, and everybody should be in the sitting room or the living room at the party, but then there's all this stuff going on in the kitchen that is really interesting. And so it focuses on that and all the drama that goes on behind the party in the kitchen where all the good stuff really happens. And the three couples, it takes place in each of the three couples' different homes. And I play Ronald, who is impressive without being distinguished.
is that the official description?
That's
the
from the script.
Okay. Ronald enters. He is... Impressive without reason.
I'm a banker and really don't have a lot of understanding about many things. There's a world of things I have no understanding of, women being one particular issue that comes up in the play. I have absolutely no idea what most women think about anything. Completely closed book to me.
Including, I gather, your wife.
Oh.
Especially his wife.
Especially my wife, Marion.
Would that be you then, Marion, who are
that's me.
Katie Baldwin? Oh, that's Debbie Richardson is Marion.
I'm Marion. Uh-huh. I'm a drunk.
You're a drunk.
Hi, Marion.
I like the gin.
Uh-huh. She's how does that go over with your husband who doesn't get you in the first place?
He doesn't really like it very much, and he scolds me quite often.
Mm-hmm. When I'm aware of it.
When he's
As
aware
I said,
of it.
I'm not aware of many things.
But you're aware of her drinking.
I try not to be, actually, but yes.
Okay. And so we have Matthew Green. Who are you in this absurdity?
I play Sidney Hopcroft.
And how is he described on his first entrance?
You know, that's a good question. I think it describes him as being small.
And dapper. Small and dapper.
Small and dapper.
Dapper. Very Matthew Green.
That's sweet. he has a cheerful, unflappable manner. Yeah.
Oh, there you go.
Yeah, I'm a young up-and-comer in the business world, trying desperately to hustle Ron into giving me a loan so I can expand my business.
He's a dynamo.
Yeah.
And your business is?
I run a general store. That's how he describes it in the play. It's
a general store. Which mm-hmm. there may have been some of back in the mm-hmm. 70s, I guess. You can even still find, well, probably in England you can still find them mm-hmm. with regularity, I'm guessing, without really knowing. And who are you married to?
I am married to Jane Hopcroft, played by Katie Baldwin.
Hello.
Katie Baldwin. Yeah, and how is your character described?
I don't know.
Bustling, I think.
Bustling.
Bustling?
Yes. I bustle quite a bit.
I think
I don't know that
entitled her Susie Homemaker. Oh, but yes.
A woman in her 30s. That's it. That's all I get. So,
that leaves it all the rest to your imagination and creativity.
That's right. I think my character's more described through her actions rather than the way she looks or the way she might appear. It's more in the things she does, like cleaning obsessively and straightening things and being very nervous and frantic and bustling about.
So very housewifish.
Oh, you know, very,
in
yes.
In an absurdly stereotypical way.
Yes, absurdly.
Absolutely.
Right, so we're missing one of the husbands today who is not with us.
Yes, of course, it's my husband.
Uh-huh. This is Kara Morisi, and your role, Kara, is?
Eva. And I make no concession in either manner or appearance.
For anything.
For anyone.
You sound like a thrill.
I'm a depressive.
Oh, that's nice.
I've been taking pills since I was very young, so I'm just sort of oblivious to a lot of the world around me.
Isn't that funny?
Yeah, it does.
It's very funny.
Yeah, exactly. I think it might be time to do a scene from this play. For those who are just tuning in and wondering what all the silliness is about, it is having to do with this play that the Celebration Company at the Station Theater is going to do rather shortly, called Absurd Person Singular by Alan Ayckbourn, or Ayckbourn, I have heard it said sometimes, who is a still active English playwright. Sir Alan, we're supposed to say, apparently. And the show opens on the 23rd of July, so about a week from now, 10 days from now. If anybody wants tickets, you can call the Station Theater or go to their web address, which is stationtheater.com. So who would like to set up the first scene that we're going to hear today?
It is happening in the first act. It is the scene where I'm looking here to see which one I've asked them to do.
The bit with the shoes.
Oh, right. Sydney and Jane. It's the first act. It's their big chance to. I'm trying to be good and
do
the dialect. Be a good model for them. For the two of them to make their dreams come true, and they're giving this party to butter up the people who are important. And some things are happening in the kitchen.
Well,
that's our setup.
Okay. Whenever you're ready, Sydney.
Come on, what are you doing?
I can't.
What?
I've got no shoes.
What do you mean, no shoes?
They're in there.
Where?
By the fireplace. I left them so I could put them on.
Well, then why didn't you?
I didn't have them. I forgot.
Well, come and get them.
No.
It's only Dick and Lottie
Potter.
You
fetch them.
I can't fetch them.
Yes, you can. Pick them up and bring them in here. Cindy, please.
Dear, oh dear. What a start. I say, what a start. They've stopped talking.
Have they?
Wondering where we are, no doubt.
Well, go in, here.
What?
Take these.
What do I do with these?
In the hall cupboard.
Oh, you're really asking rather a lot tonight, aren't you?
I'm sorry.
Well, it's got to stop. It's got to stop. I've got to entertain out here, you know? Brief pause while I go get the shoes.
And she's fretting in the kitchen, fretting.
Yes, I will. I will. I'll tell her that, Dick. Here.
Oh, thank goodness.
Now, for heaven's sake, come in.
Yes, I'm sorry. What did Dick say?
When?
Just now, that you told him you'd tell me.
I really can't remember. Now then, are you ready?
Yes, yes.
Right then. It's a good job it's only Dick and Lottie out there. Might have been the Brewster Wrights. I'd have had a job explaining this to them, walking in and out all night like a shoe salesman. All right.
Yes.
Right. Here she is. Here she is at last.
Here I am.
At last.
And there's a bit of time while we wait for the next incident.
Meanwhile, there's puttering around the...
I run in, yes, searching frantically for something.
Yes, well, you say that to Lottie, not me. I don't want to know that. Oh, what are you doing, Sydney? What are you doing?
Bottle opener. I can't find a bottle opener. I can't get the top off Lottie's bitter lemon.
It's in there.
In there?
Why didn't you ask me?
Where in there?
On the mantelpiece.
The mantelpiece?
It looked nice on the mantelpiece.
There's no use having a bottle opener on a mantelpiece, is it? I mean, how am I...
Ding dong. Somebody else.
All right, I'll go. I'll go. You open the bitter lemon. With gin.
Gin and bitter lemon.
And shake the bottle first.
Gin and bitter lemon. Shake the bottle first. Gin and bitter lemon. Shake the bottle first. Gin and bitter lemon. Shake the bottle first.
It's them.
Mr. and Mrs. Brewster, right?
Yes, Ronald and Marion. Come in.
Ronald and Marion.
Come in.
Gin and bitter lemon. Shake the bottle first.
Bit of space while we wait.
Wait there. Just wait there.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. I'm terribly sorry.
That's all right. Can't be helped.
Here's a cloth.
Oh, thank you. Yes, yes. I'll just use this one, if you don't mind.
Well, what a start, eh? What a grand start to the evening. Really, Jane.
I'm terribly sorry. I didn't realize it was going to splash like that.
Well, tricky things, soda siphons. You either get a splash or a dry gurgle. Never a happy medium.
Your nice suit.
Oh, good God. It's only soda water. Probably do it good, eh?
Don't know about that.
Thanks very much. Well, it's wet enough outside there. I didn't expect to get wet inside as well.
No.
Terribly sorry.
Accidents happen. Soon dry out. I'll run around for a bit.
I tell you what, I could let you have a pair of my trousers from upstairs just while yours dry out.
Oh, yes!
No, that's all right. I'll stick with these. Hate to break up the suit, eh?
All right, darling.
Yes, yes.
Oh, isn't this gorgeous? Isn't this enchanting?
Oh.
What a simply dishy kitchen, aren't you lucky?
Well...
It's so beautifully arranged, Ronnie, don't you agree? Isn't this splendid?
Ah.
Just look at these working surfaces, and you must have a gorgeous view from that window, I imagine.
Well...
It must be stunning. You must look right over the fields at the back.
No.
We're just looking at next door's fence.
Well, which way are the fields?
I've no idea.
How extraordinary. I must be thinking of somewhere else.
Mind you, we've got a good 10 yards to the fence.
On a clear day, eh?
Beg pardon.
Oh, look, Ronnie, do come look at these cupboards.
Eh?
Look at these, Ronnie. They're so easy to open and shut.
Drawers here, you see?
Oh, lovely deep drawers. Put all sorts of things in these, can't you? And then just shut it up and forget them.
Yes, yes, they're handy for that.
No, but it's these cupboards. I'm afraid I really do envy you these. Don't you envy them, Ronnie?
I thought we had cupboards.
Yes, darling, but they're nothing like these. Just open and shut that door. It's heaven.
Cupboard's a cupboard.
Look, Sydney's Christmas present to me.
Oh, lovely. What is it? Hairspray?
Oh, no, that's the fly spray. My wife meant the machine.
Machine?
Washing machine, here.
Oh, that's a machine tucked under there. How thrilling. What a marvelous Christmas present.
Well, yes.
Do tell me, how did you manage to keep it a surprise from her?
Well...
I mean, don't tell me you hid it or wrapped it up. I don't believe it.
No, I just arranged for the men to deliver it and plumb it in.
They flooded the kitchen.
Super.
It's the automatic. It's got all these programs and then spin drying and soak.
Oh, good heavens. Ronnie, come here at once and see this.
Just coming.
What's this? Whites, coloreds? My God, it's apartheid.
Beg pardon?
What's this? Minimum icon? What on earth is that?
No, minimum iron.
Don't tell me it does the ironing, too. Ronnie, have you seen this extraordinary machine?
Yes, yes.
It not only does your washing and your whites and your coloreds and your blacks and so on, it does your ironing.
No.
No.
We shall soon be totally redundant.
And that's the end of that particular
scene. From Absurd Person Singular by Alan Ayckbourn. which the Celebration Company at the Station Theater is going to be opening on the 23rd of July in Urbana. And those folks are here on Live and Local on FM 90.9. And those folks were, I think I've got everybody straight here, Katie Baldwin playing the role of Jane Hopcroft, which says here, 20s to 30s housewife. Matthew Green, Sydney, her husband, I was going to say his wife, which doesn't make any sense at all. In this case, 20s to 30s young businessman. Lincoln Macula is as Ronald or Ronnie, a banker. Debbie Richardson, Marion, his wife. Ryan, and then the other two didn't get into this particular scene, but there is another couple, one of whom isn't here today, the male of whom is not here today in any event. But we're pleased that you're able to come on the show and talk a little bit about it. You know, I'm always curious when people do casting. I've been involved in some of this myself for musicals, but never for straight theater. So I'm going to put Joy on the spot here, since I assume you were involved in casting these people as the director, Joy Hofsummer. What did you see in each of these people sitting here that made you decide that they were the character that they are now playing?
A lot of what I was looking for was I was looking for couples. And so that's a lot of what I did, was sort of try and find couples that I thought would have a certain kind of energy and a certain kind of presence between them, as well as with everyone else. And I also kind of wanted to have three distinctive, this I wasn't looking for necessarily in the people themselves, but then in what we are doing with them in terms of social status, and also in terms of age range. You know, that we've got the young up-and-coming couple, and then we have a more artsy sort of middle-class couple, and then we have the very well-established older couple, which, you know what I mean, yeah. And then a lot of some of the dynamics of the play is the social climbing and the sort of vying for position as well.
You're ducking the question.
I am.
That is very interesting.
Yeah.
I'm still interested about all these people here, who only one of whom I know at all, really. I mean, I've seen two others of you before. But I don't know, you know, what about these people?
Okay.
What about
all right,
Debbie Richardson made her Marion?
Yeah, I've worked once with Debbie before, and I liked her. I guess I liked her. She has a good sense of humor, and I thought her ability to understand Marion's, well, the absurdity of that character, going back to this title that's not really supposed to have anything to do with it, but her situation being rather tragic, but really being able to laugh at it at the same time, which is what you have to do, you know.
And Debbie, is there, you know, do you consider yourself a tragic figure personally?
No.
No.
So this is the acting part.
This is the acting part.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And what about Katie Baldwin? Jane Hopcroft.
Katie has a quirky sort of sensibility and a sort of a vulnerability, which I like very much in Jane. So that's what she in particular brings to it, not only what, you know, these aren't the only qualities people bring,
sure,
but that's something that she has that I like in this character.
And Katie, does that surprise you at all?
It surprises me that other people see it. I suppose I knew that about myself, but I wouldn't particularly think that other people would see that.
The vulnerable part?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I have a hard candy shell.
So Joy didn't misjudge.
No, she didn't at all. I think she has a very keen perception.
And so what is the vulnerability?
Just that, like everyone else, I'm vulnerable to criticism or, you know, not being popular, not being liked, or saying the wrong thing. And Jane, I think, is just terrified of that. And I sort of inject my own social fears and amplify them into this really frantic kind of crazy character, I guess.
You know, I had this sort of odd image. I just started to reread the Harry Potter book that, you know, for the movie that is about to open next week. Or is it this week already?
This week, yes.
And I wondered if, do you read those? Have you read those
I
books?
I have. Yeah. I've read two of them.
Do you relate your character at all by any chance to Aunt Petunia? Who seems to be somewhat rather that sort of character.
But Jane is not, doesn't have a mean bone in her body.
Jane does not have a sarcastic or mean or spiteful bone in her body. She absolutely has no ulterior motives or any kind of mean or critical eye to people. She just...
What you see is what you get with Jane.
Very much, yes. And Joy's told me several times, you know, in rehearsal, she said, Jane does not hold a grudge. She doesn't stay sad for very long. She doesn't get upset for very long. She can feel very deep emotion, but she always goes back to her kind of default setting, which is very cheerful and bright-eyed and very nice and kind and warm.
On the surface.
Yes. I don't think there's a lot of oppression in her life. It took me a long time to get past that a woman who cleans that much must be
really does love
must
to do it.
She really oppressed. And Joy says, no, she really loves it. And I said, okay, I can get to that place. It will take a while, but I'm finally getting that she really does enjoy it. She likes that order and she likes that calm activity. That cleaning things and making them right calms her. And it's really not any fear from the outside, like her husband's going to yell at her or beat her or anything crazy like that. It's like she just really prefers it that way. It's very, very interesting for me to get to that place.
I had a friend in college who liked cleaning so much that she was quite happy when people would give her, as gifts, cleaning supplies.
This is Jane.
She's very serious.
My husband gave me a washing machine for Christmas, and I love it.
Apparently, yeah.
Just love it. It's the best thing I've ever had.
We gathered from that last scene. So continuing down the row here, Lincoln Macula represented something to you, Joy, mm-hmm. At the audition that made him Ronald the Banker, or Ronnie.
Well, again, I think all of these people, one of the biggest things they can bring to it is that sense of humor and that understanding of playfulness. And I think Lincoln especially, and he also has a great sense of that sort of pompous style that Ronnie has. I mean, he can go there so easily and it's just, it's very funny. And he does that with such ease.
And why is that, Lincoln, that you can manage to do pompous so easily?
Oh, I don't know. Just something that goes, really. Rather runs in the family, you know?
But see, I'm asking Lincoln, not Ronald.
Oh, I'm sorry.
Can we talk to Lincoln?
Your pardon. Yeah. Well, I remember I came out and asked for the role. That was one thing. I remember we were doing auditions, and it was dual auditions for the Full Monty and for this play. And so I had my singing audition, and I was prepared to strip, but I stated right there on the form, I said, I'd really want to do Ronald because I thought he was the most appropriate for me in age and so on and temperament. I just thought, oh, I could really play this guy. And
so in temperament, does that mean you see yourself as a pompous person?
Not at all, no. But I could see myself playing a pompous person, certainly. I felt that the attitudes, you know, just from my own experience of watching British television and movies and reading, you know, British humor, I thought, oh, yeah, I could do this character, sure.
Yeah, a lot of what you look for in an actor is not necessarily the qualities of the character. You look for the actor's ability to stretch themselves to find some quality of the character.
But it's also true, isn't it, that often, as you pointed out with Katie, there's some underlying thing that
they may not be aware of, if they can tap into it. Mm-hmm. You know, that, and we all have almost, well, I believe this really, an infinite ability to express almost any human emotion. And it's just, you know, whether or not you can tap into it.
And Cara Morisi is, let's see, who is she? Did you say Eva or Eva? Eva Jackson, the wife of Jeffrey, the architect. How did she end up with that part?
Well, for one thing, and this may be well, I guess this is all right. I can say this. She physically suited it very well. It's what I wanted someone sort of thin and willowy, and that's what, you know, so physically she was very much there for me. And then also and kind of with an artistic look to her. And again, she showed a sense of humor. She showed a grasp of the humor in the pathos, which is absolutely essential for, we can't feel too sorry for her, or we won't laugh at the situation. It's the situation that's so funny. And she is walking that fine line very, very nicely.
It sounds like she might be the darkest of the characters.
I think so, mm-hmm. Yes.
Yeah, how did you describe it at the beginning?
Well, his description of her is that she makes no concession in either manner or appearance.
There you go, yeah. That can be difficult to deal with, can't it?
It's a very challenging role, and I'm having a wonderful time just discovering her. She has so many layers, and she changes so much from the beginning.
She has a journey, a real journey.
Mm, yeah. Of all the characters, she's the one who has goes the farthest in her journey through the play, the whole arc of her character. I don't know how much you want to say about the second act, but it's...
Well, what we can say is that my character doesn't speak during act two, but I'm...
She never leaves the stage.
I'm constantly on stage from the moment act two begins to the moment it ends, and everything I do has to be conveyed through my actions, my face, my emotions, my body. So
that part would really not work.
Yeah, we're
radio.
Not doing not anything for act two.
She does do it brilliantly. It's absolutely wonderful to see. And then by the end of the play, you realize she's the strongest person of them all.
I've gained a lot of momentum along the way. So, mm-hmm.
So Carrie, you said you thought it was a particularly challenging role. Is it particularly because of that last act of not having anything to say, but you have to convey it some other way?
Or? That's part of it. Having to use your internal dialogue and monologue to convey something, to really understand the character on a level that you aren't just given on the page, but that you really have to understand, who is this person, why would they react this way, and what would you do in this situation, and just really digging deep into these emotions. And also, she is a character that is on several substances, so to also convey the effects of those substances and how they interact with the personality, and also just the amount of change throughout the show, to start out in one state of mind and end in another. It's really fun.
And I assume that one of the challenges is to play a character under the influence of substances without being so yourself.
Yes. Well, I think if I was under some influence, it would be really hard to play to play that. But to just understand the state of mind and be able to put yourself there and not hold back, not be afraid to really go to those dark, dark places. And one of the things we discussed in our first reading of the play was how important it was to play everything as real, not as I'm going to be funny, because if you try to be funny, you're not funny. It's when you play the real of the moment that the truth comes out, and then you can see the humor in it. So as we said, my character is very dark, but it's very funny because you can relate.
The situation is funny. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they're put in these bizarre situations, which is the funny.
It's a bit anachronistic. Back in the 70s, we realized how hilarious alcoholism and chemical dependency were, but that attitude seems to have changed somewhat over the years.
Shifted.
Well, I always say that comedy can be harder to play than drama.
Oh, it's much harder. Oh. Yeah, much harder. Mm-hmm.
And maybe that's part of the reason that when you try to be funny.
Yes, you can't try to
really
be funny. You have to rise to the level of the situation. And a lot of times that requires caring more than you have to care too much. Things have to be even larger and more important. The example I always give is of the Seinfeld characters. I mean, they are actually in situations talking about things that shouldn't really matter all that much. But the funny is how much they care, you know, and so that's what makes the situation funny. And the level of embarrassment is also a very important part of when things are funny.
The level of embarrassment.
For the characters.
Oh, yes.
Yeah. Yes. The more embarrassed they are, the funnier it is for us watching, because we relate and we'll laugh.
Any examples of that? Katie, looks like you're thinking of something.
I am. I was just thinking of the little bit we just did with the shoes. If I just said, "Oh, dear, could you go in there and get my shoes, please? Thank you." Okay, that's not funny, it's not interesting, it's real, but it doesn't mean anything. If I'm absolutely petrified to go into that room with my slippers on instead of my shoes, and I would rather melt into a puddle in my kitchen rather than walk out into a party without my shoes on, then that's funny. Those stakes are much higher, and it's much more interesting. And you just have to take that reality up a notch.
And what was your equivalent line instead?
What do I say? I say lots of things.
You just start off with, "I can't."
Say, "I can't."
Yeah.
He goes, "What? I've got no shoes." Like, oh, God. I mean, if I said, "Oh, I can't go in there. I don't have my shoes. Could you get them, please?"
Yeah, that's
And he brings
different.
Them, and I say, "Thank you, dear."
And that's what makes it a much shorter scene, also.
This play would be a third as long if everything
if
was just
If people didn't
okay.
care so much.
If everyone's response was, "Oh, all right."
Yeah,
oh, all
that's
right.
fine.
Yes. All right.
Well, since we finally heard the voice of Matthew Green right there in the midst of all this discussion, I want to know, how did Matthew become, or how did he seem to be, Sidney Hopcroft, which sounds to me to be the most stuffy of the names, but maybe that doesn't relate at all.
He sent lots of threatening letters. Headless teddy bears.
He's what I was hoping for and looking for was this... Again, someone who does make a journey, who changes. I wanted a certain, and this is not anything, because I actually do think Matthew's a very good-looking man. But I wanted a nebbishness, sort of a nerdy guy. And so I found that in Matthew.
I play that a lot, Joy.
Do
it's
you
not, it's
really?
Not a stretch. It's
okay,
fine.
All right.
He's not gasping. What?
Yeah. So you're not gasping. You're not offended by this.
In any no.
way. Yeah.
No.
And you're actually sitting reading while the rest of us are talking. So maybe that sort of fits the character.
He's shy.
I'm just trying to be as invisible as possible.
On radio.
Even on radio. Isn't that amazing?
Look at that.
Yeah.
So
doesn't like to be seen.
Yeah, how do you take this assessment of
I'm thrilled
from Joy,
because she saw in me what she needed. So there's no problem there.
What did she miss?
Nothing. I don't have that many layers, that's fine. I'm not really that interested in doing much of anything in theater unless it's a challenge, unless it's something that scares me a little or is going to force me to try something new. I very rarely am that interested in being involved in something just for something to do or just because I want to be part of the group. I like the work. And comedy terrifies me. Absolutely. It's the scariest thing a person can do on stage. I would have been far more comfortable taking my clothes off in the Full Monty than I am doing comedy, because it's that difficult. As you were saying, it's far, you know, it's really hard to be funny.
And what other roles have you done, either comedic or otherwise, that you've also found challenging?
Oh, wow. When we did Twelfth Night, Katie and I, for the Park District over the summer, was that last summer?
That was last summer.
Yeah, last summer.
Yeah.
It was Shakespeare, which I love doing, but it was Malvolio in Twelfth Night, and he's such a ridiculous character, and he's so... He goes on a bit of a journey, too, and it's not a good one. By the end of the play, he's absolutely demoralized, borderline insane, because he's been so badly duped by everyone, and he's so filled with rage and embarrassment. And I got, because we were doing an anachronistic interpretation, we were doing it very 1980s, I got to wear some truly horrific clothes.
By horrific, you mean hilarious.
Yeah.
That always helps.
Bright yellow short shorts. Shave my legs for that part.
I like the idea of saving your leg.
Yeah, my leg. Just the one.
Just the one.
Just the one. Yeah. We're doing a leotard kind of thing. No. And then, you know, on the other end of the spectrum, I suppose, when we did Lieutenant of Inishmore with Lincoln.
He was a hilarious killer.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. Absolutely. Playing an absolute psychopathic.
Now, that's a dark comedy.
Too dangerous for the IRA hitman.
It was a dark and bloody comedy.
Yes.
But it was great.
That was a bit of a challenge.
That was also at the station.
Oh, yes.
I was tortured to death on stage by him.
Mm-hmm.
I loved that.
Mm-hmm.
Got to do a lot of screaming.
Yeah. There's an image from that show that I dearly love, which is me sitting and very tenderly, very lovingly cradling a headless, dead cat covered in blood sitting atop his corpse.
Not a real dead cat, mind you.
No, of course not. Theater.
All those PETA people out there, don't worry.
It's no. Theater. Love the kitties.
Don't fake.
So, yeah, that would be very interesting to ask that director why he got chosen for
that. Yes, that would be interesting, wouldn't it?
I can't answer for anyone, but he does have that dark in him and about him. He can do that, and he can play that and go to those places.
Uh-huh.
He's blushing.
Well, we are talking to members of the cast of the Celebration Company at the Station Theater in Urbana, who are going to be putting on a comedy by Alan Ayckbourn called Absurd Person Singular, directed by Joy Hoffsummer, who is also with us on Live and Local here on FM 90.9. I'm Kevin Kelly, and we have a scene to come in just a moment. Today's broadcast is made possible with support from the Sea Boat, featuring the Southern style of cooking walleye and catfish, chicken shrimp sandwiches, and more, available for dine-in and carry-out. The Sea Boat, 402 West Kirby, across from Jerry's IGA in Champaign. Catering service is available at 355-9933.
Yum.
Yeah, see, you can say that. I can't, because I can't endorse any of these folks that are supporting
I'm hungry.
Our show. But we are very grateful for their support, as we are for all of our listeners, to all of our listeners who support this program with your financial contributions. It's also time for me to run down some of the other events that you can go see and hear in our area. There's a few of them over the next couple of days. Tonight in Decatur, the Decatur Municipal Band is playing in Central Park, a free concert at 7 o'clock. Today is the 13th, isn't it? Monday the 13th. Yeah, so that's tonight. Mitchell's Bluegrass and Gospel, playing at the Dockside Cafe at Kickapoo Landing in Oakwood. That's tomorrow night at 5:30. At the Little Theater on the Square in Sullivan, it's Funny Girl, a musical. That is 8 o'clock tomorrow, and twice on Wednesday, 2 o'clock and 8 o'clock. Zoo Improv is at the Indigo Gallery in Champaign, a new gallery, and Zoo Improv is, I believe, there every Tuesday through July, if I saw that right. And one of our guests today, Cara Morisi, is a member of Zoo Improv. Anybody else in that group?
Oh, no, but I have an improv group I have to plug.
In a moment, I'll let you.
Yeah. All right. Don't have to, but they'll be so mad if I don't at least say the name. Yeah,
so that's tomorrow night at 8 and 10:30. And again, as it happens, Wednesday evening at the Iron Post, Zoo Improv at the Iron Post in downtown Urbana, 8 o'clock. That's their monthly Wednesday gig there. And the Peoria Municipal Band is in the Peoria Riverfront, free concert Wednesday evening at 7:30. And the University of Illinois Summer Band is playing on the Quad, weather permitting, Wednesday evening at 7 o'clock, also a free concert. So those are just some things that you can do in our area. So what is the improv group that you wanted to mention, Katie Baldwin?
I'm in the Abe Froman Project, and it doesn't conflict with Kara's improv troops. Otherwise, I wouldn't mention it. we're at Mike and Molly's every Monday, and we've been going about a year now. So I don't think as long as Zoo Improv. You've been going for quite a while.
5 years.
They're like the old vets, and we're just kind of the new scrappy rookies, I guess.
And Mike and Molly's is also in downtown Champaign.
Mm-hmm, that's right, every Monday, yep.
So we have another scene to do here, which I've been putting off as long as possible.
Now, we have another one before that one, do we just have time for the
We may the just one? Have time for one.
Okay, well, let's do that one then.
I'm perfectly happy to skip that particular one in which I'm supposed to be sucked into this.
Yes, and actually, if we don't do this next one, we miss out on Kara. So we do
need
to do that
one. Well, we can't miss out on Kara.
No.
And it's also in the first act. I wanted to kind of stay in that act. Well, for one thing, because so much of the humor of the second act is physical. And then we just might give away too much if we do the third act. So we're staying in the first act. And this is during the same party. Everyone is there now. And Sydney is in the kitchen looking for Jane, who has disappeared inexplicably to him. We know where he's gone, or where she's gone, but he doesn't. And Ava enters.
And am I supposed to have something in this one?
No, not in this
not
one.
Not this one. Okay,
if we
good.
Have time for the
it's
next
the
one.
Hook.
I'm sure we won't.
Oh, darn.
I'll see to that.
You'll see
that
to
was
it.
A
we
good
don't.
One.
May I have a glass of water?
Beg your pardon?
I have to take these.
Oh, yes. Well, there's a glass here somewhere, I think. Here we are.
What? Oh, thanks.
Yeah. Not ill, I hope.
What?
The pills. Not ill.
Depends on what you mean by ill, doesn't it?
Ah,
if you mean, do they prevent me from turning into a raving lunatic? The answer's probably yes.
Raving lunatic, yes. But then I always say it helps to be a bit mad, doesn't it? I mean, we're all a bit mad. I'm a bit mad. Yes. It's a mad world, they say.
Extraordinary to think that one's sanity can depend on these. Frightening, isn't it? Alarming. Do you know, I've been taking pills of one sort or another since I was 8 years old. What chance does your body have? My husband tells me that even if I didn't need them, I'd still have to take them. My whole mentality is geared around swallowing tablets every 3 hours, 24 hours a day. I even have to set an alarm at night. You're looking at a mess. A wreck. Don't you sometimes long to be out of your body and free? Free just to float? I know I do. And at this point, I throw the glass into the trash can and hand him the empty pill case. Thanks. My God, was that our car horn?
When?
Just now.
Oh, no, I don't think so.
If you do hear it, it's George.
George?
Our dog.
Oh, yes, of course.
We left him in the car, you see. We have to leave him in the car these days. He's just impossible. He's all right there usually, but lately he's been getting bored and he's learnt to push the horn button with his nose. He just rests his nose on the steering wheel, you see.
That's clever.
Not all that clever. We've had the police out twice.
Bit like children dogs.
What makes you say that?
Need a bit of a firm hand now and again. Smack if they're naughty.
You don't smack George. You negotiate terms.
Ah, yeah.
He was only this big when we bought him. Now he's grown into a sort of yak. When we brought him home, he... My God, was that me?
What?
Did I put that glass in there?
Yes.
My God, I knew it. I'm going mad. I'm finally going mad. Will you please tell my husband if he drinks any more, I'm walking home.
Well, I think that might be better coming from you as his wife.
You really think he'd listen to me? He doesn't even know I'm here. As far as he's concerned, my existence ended the day he married me. I'm just an embarrassing smudge on a marriage license.
Ah.
Continue on?
Okay. No,
that's it. That's the scene. Yeah. Okay, good. Yeah. I love that last line, an embarrassing smudge on a marriage license.
It's very Ava thing to say.
When you meet Jeffrey, you realize that he has several women that he sees on a regular basis.
Yeah, he's the one we haven't talked about because Ryan, and I've lost his last name.
Ryan Rogers.
Ryan Rogers is not here, was taken ill. So we have to give him his due. I won't be able to get him to follow up here, but tell us about Ryan Rogers and Jeffrey Jackson and how they relate to each other.
Well, I liked Kara and Ryan together as a couple, and I sort of now see, how can I say, I like a little bit of swagger that Ryan can bring to it, and
there are nods of agreement going on.
Yeah, I think that he works well in that way for the character, and works hard for the needs of the role. So it's been great all around. Everyone's really stepping up to the plate, working hard, and at best it should seem effortless, and in order for that to happen, there's a tremendous amount of work that goes into it. So,
speaking of, how long have you been rehearsing the show?
When did we start?
June 15th.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
So about a little more than a month, maybe mm-hmm. five weeks before
we
you do the thing,
right?
And Before we let everybody go, and we're just about at the end of our time on Live and Local here today, what is there about the Celebration Company that is special, and particularly, you know, that attracts the company to a play like this?
I can't stop smiling.
There must be some reason.
I just love it. I adore it. It's my second home. I love
Mine too.
Every. It's my family.
The station.
I love everyone there. I love the space, just being there, even if I'm not involved. Just going to a show or even walking by it, I feel proud to be a part of it and to just be in it.
I like the work they do because they do some edgy stuff, and a lot of the community theaters don't take those risks and do some of that more edgy theater, and I really love that about the station. And
absolutely.
With Katie, I love working with everybody there too. So
I don't get to do as much as I'd like to just because of my children and everything, but the quality of the work at that theater I think is consistently high, and it's just something to be really proud of. And we have such a wonderful group of people, and always new people coming in and discovering new talent in this community. It's a great space.
And joining that core group of people who've been there either from the beginning, we're talking now about 37, 38 years, or people who, you know, Katie and I, who are probably the newest to the group of anybody. I've only been at the station, I think this is my third season.
I've been there technically about 10 years, but only...
That's right.
I did like two shows back in high school and
that's
then
right.
not again for
yeah, I'm not
seven
from
or
here.
Eight. That's right. And then not again for 7 or 8 years, yeah. The first show I think I really did was about 2 years ago.
But we look to this, you know, not older necessarily, but this more established generation of actors and directors and performers. And, you know, there's so giving and so willing to train and to bring people into the fold and to establish that pride and to establish that... that determination to create things of quality. There is a professionalism that goes on, and there is a pride in the work that is really, really admirable.
Well, I've certainly always been impressed by the shows I've seen at the Station Theater, and I think this is the third show that we've featured on Live and Local, and I don't believe there's been any crossover in actors, and some of them have been founding people, and some of them very new. And I appreciate having all of you come in today. Joy Hoffsummer is the director of Absurd Person Singular, which is going to open at the Station Theater in Urbana on the 23rd. Our actors, Katie Baldwin, Matthew Green, Cara Morisi, Lincoln Macula, and Debbie Richardson. Thanks to all of you for coming in today.
Thank you.
Thank you.
And as they say, break a leg.
Thanks.
Thanks.
Programs today are made possible in part by Krannert Center for the Performing Arts, inviting audiences to explore the newly announced 2009-2010 season. Tickets are on sale Thursday, July 16th at 10 a.m. More information is at krannertcenter.com. This is Live and Local. I'm Kevin Kelly.